So to sort of add to a little bit of what Jeff said, I have this strange title. So I'm over here, and I'm IBM Fellow Emeritus. I'm also proud to be a Fellow of the BCS and a Fellow of the IET. And there's a whole, I could spend the whole evening talking about what I've done with IBM, the BCS and the IET over the years. but one of the things is these two gents here, who are in the front with me, Richard and Kevin, Richard Hopkins and Kevin Jenkins, actually became fellows of the institutions through the scheme that IBM runs with both the IET and the BCS to encourage IBM people to join through a licensed agreement. And these two guys did all the hard work a few years ago and wrote a book on Bramfield, Eating the IT Elephant, right, moving from Greenfield to Bramfield, which is what I'm going to discuss tonight. My title of emeritus is, a couple of years ago, I retired formally from IBM and have been basically working for them on a part-time basis ever since. Right? Part-time means, of the part-time, I get paid for part of the part-time. And a lot of it is what I choose to do with IBM, for IBM, but also for the industry. And when I describe the problem, what I'm trying to do is, I've had a really good career in IT. I started in 1969, and in this audience, usually that ends up with me being the most experienced person in the room, but I can see probably I'm not. Okay? But in the 42 plus years I've worked in the industry, which was actually, I joined the computer industry. Yeah, there wasn't an IT industry in 1969. We now have two industries and they're different. Yeah. Happy to discuss that over coffee later, or whatever else comes out. So I've helped create this problem called Bramfield that I'll then define. The fourth gentleman you probably heard of is Grady Booch. Grady was sort of one of the gang of three that created Rational and was one of the driving force behind UML. He is still an IBM fellow. I live in Devon and he lives in Hawaii. Right. Clearly I have better taste. I have better taste. Right. So we continue. He's going to be a leg. Okay. Yeah. Forget the words. I know you can't all read them. But I'll sort of paraphrase what the problem is. Right. There's a very interesting thing now. That this group is advanced programming. Yeah. Now, so if you could see this interesting statistic, this is probably about 4 or 5 years old now, so it's, the problem's even bigger. This came from a gentleman called Capers Jones, who is actually is also ex-IBM and runs a business that focuses on capturing metrics about our industry. Right? And his figure was half a billion years of programming effort has been spent in creating what I call a brownfield problem. Yeah? It really started back in the 60s with things like general purpose computing, computers, and third generation languages, etc. The thinking before that was you bought this hugely expensive piece of equipment and software was free. Now, you know, you developed the software. And of course, when you bought a new computer, invariably you have to rewrite the software. Yeah? Now, what happens since that is the first people who adopted in the 60s, people like financial institutions, like the Royal Bank, that Jeff just mentioned, yeah? Utility companies, insurance companies, you know, banks, government. Right. There's an awful lot of that original code of the 60s, I'm proud that some of my early code is still running. It's as nearly as long as my career. When I wrote it, I never expected it to be running now. On the journey, lots of things have changed. Lots of things have been added to, right? Some of the core systems of things were designed, say, 40 years ago. The sort of style of programming was batch. Still hugely important for batch mass processing type things that happen according to a sequence, whether it's producing bank statements or utility bills or whatever. You'll never get away from that type of processing. Then we went to the online world. Yes?
Can you explain the dimension years?
Years here?
Yeah.
Oh, got this. Yeah. This is effort. Effort. Man years. Person years, sorry. Let's be demographically correct. It's person years. Person years. Okay? If it was elapsed time, that would be the National Health Programme. Sorry. Who bought the Times today? From an industry perspective, wasn't it grim reading? We only ever, you know, when was the last time the Times had 3.5 pages on an IT project? Yeah? When was that? Have they ever produced 3.5 pages of a successful IT project? Right? Why is our industry seen so negatively? Right? The other big lesson I've got here, this thing here, you know, I know it as the world. It's looking brown, I know, that's the brownfield world. The world wouldn't be what it is without us. You ever think about that? What industry would run? Banks couldn't run without us. You might think that's a good thing. We couldn't manage supply chains. We couldn't buy our goods in a supermarket. We couldn't insure things. We couldn't do mobile communication. We couldn't bill. Every industry is dependent on IT. The world is a better place, in my view, because of it. I won't use the word humble view, because I think we shouldn't be humble. We should be proud of what we've achieved. And it's depressing when it's only the bad things that ever make the press. Okay? So, but what's happening, the next few slides will describe the impact of brownfield in terms of productivity and, more worryingly, in my view, innovation. Okay? So, here's a nice case study. I tried to get an up-to-date chart. I couldn't find an up-to-date chart. This is in the public domain, so this is NASA, right? So today, most IT shops will claim they're running 70 to 90% of their budget to keep the lights on. So that's being spent on infrastructure, support, license fees, maintenance, da 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 da. Just keeping it running. Okay? A good IT shop is seen at running at 70%, a poor one at 90%. NASA is probably seen as quite a good IT shop with all the things they've done, yeah? And they're running at 83%, 17% on you. Right? So, this is where you get new value to the business delivered. Innovation will come out of there, not out of there. Okay? So that's one thing to think of. Right? Yeah.
I think I have to add that I have an IBM study done in 1974 which shows exactly the same pie chart, and the number is 70% of that one. So it's not a new problem.
The problem's not new. I think they have got better. Some IT shops have got better because they've dragged it back from 90, right? I think there's perhaps some metric manipulation on some of the 70% shops, yeah? But that sort of scopes it, right? There's a few quotes here. I'll pick a couple. One was Grady and I sort of slightly view. He believes, so in all of this, these old systems, some of which are 40 plus years, some of that code's still there, right? Grady's view is as soon as you write it, it becomes legacy, right? I've always thought of it as soon as you put it into production, it becomes legacy. Because some things, there's probably a lot of code around the National Health Program that will never get there, right? So I'm not sure which legacy. Sorry? Where are we? Oh, Grady's quote. Yeah. Yeah. That one there. This one. Cumulative mass is large, right? That is basically what you're maintaining. The bigger it is, the harder it is to change. Okay. When I was trying to find the NASA chart, I only just discovered this. This is a different aspect at a higher level, if you like, than just code and systems, which is, this is published earlier this year. Right? This is another big focus in the industry at the moment, that in the federal US IT, they've quadrupled the number of data centers in the last 13 years. No, sorry, 12, yeah, from 98. They've gone from under 500 to 2,000. Yeah. A lot of people, and their intent is to reconsolidate data centers, right? Partly for a green strategy, right? But cost basis, group, whatever, is to collapse things down again. Again, that's a different view of perhaps a brownfield issue. Because in terms of collapsing things, you have to know what's in them. And largely, a lot of people don't know what's in them. I know of a certain organisation in the UK recently, they had a room with 800 servers and they didn't know what they did. So they turned them off. Nothing happened. Okay. So, another view. This was a system I worked on with these two characters at the front who wrote the book. And we were looking at another thought. Right? In lots of IT systems I've seen developed, there is an overemphasis on this and an underemphasis on this. And invariably systems fail for these reasons. It won't perform, it's not available, it's not usable. All those sort of illity things, those, yeah. And they get too little focus and often too little effort put into the project to actually make them happen. Now very recently I did some work somewhere in Europe, which I can't tell you where, for a financial institution. This was in retirement-ish. Right. Since I retired from IBM, wasn't an IBM project, it was a client project, yeah. And in it, the reason that they spent a huge amount of money on developing a new system, and the system was the business, that's what it did, it managed the financial products, and the business drivers were maintainability, speed to market, which came off maintainability. How can I launch a new product? Yeah. Scalability, right? Things like this. Flexibility. That's always very difficult. Flexibility. So I read the non-functional requirements. I can remember them very clearly. Flexibility. What do you think the flexibility requirement was? Have a guess. The system must be flexible. Can you write the test case for me? Yeah. So they had all, that was the reason they did it, but they hadn't spent any time. This was 3 years into the program, and then they had developed this system. And by the way, it was inflexible, not scalable, not maintainable. It got cancelled, I'm afraid. So, non-functionals, and over here is something that we never really focus on. Hardly anybody installs a greenfield system these days. Right? The term brownfield we chose very carefully because it's analogous. People can figure it out compared to brownfield development of buildings. Right? So if you look at what the brownfield definition for buildings, it's very similar. You know, you've got this very complex IT landscape. Let's say people don't really know what the system does. It's not documented. They rely on systems experts who don't really know the system. They know it at a level, but they don't really know what's implemented in the software definitions. And hidden within all of that lot is a pile of constraints, be they functional or non-functional. Right? And by the way, the name, we were reminiscing, walking over, we, for some early brownfield work we did, we actually got a BCS gold medal a few years ago for some work we did at the, and we can mention this because it was in at the DWP, right? And we thought, well, it has to go further than this, and that's where the name came from. It was at the BCS awards dinner some years back, I don't know, 6 years ago, something like that. So the BCS is responsible for the name in some way. IBM last year did this survey, a global survey of CEOs, right? CIOs and CTOs. Right? One of the things I had to say is actively manage systematic complexity. So it's not a case of taking brownfield and solving it. It's an ongoing problem. Things will get more and more complex. Yeah? You can't just get rid of the legacy, it's impossible. Right? Back in the late 90s, do you remember the phrase internet years? Who remembers internet years? Okay, who can tell me what an internet year was? 3 months. Right? About that time, some young upstart at IBM, I'm still young, redefined internet years as building legacy quicker. Okay? Because we did. The industry did. It's an inclusive thing. Lots of those early websites didn't survive. Okay? You can't get away from complexity, you have to manage complexity. You can't get away from it. Right? Another example. I always remember it was about the first time I read the Chaos Survey. Anybody ever read the Chaos Survey from Standish? Right. It was probably about 8 or 9 years ago, and it hasn't moved that much. The horrible statistic was they had three categories: large, medium, small. Succeeded, challenged, failed. And when I read this, the first time I ever read it, what depressed me was a large project was $10 million or more. Very simple, just $10 million total cost. There were no projects delivered successfully. 51% were challenged, 49% were cancelled. Okay. So that was chaos. Right? This is a real project. I hope I anonymised it sufficiently. And when we did this, we were in large discussion with the client about how much it would cost to install two packages. And I would assert what often happens, oh, it's only a package. Yeah. Actually, package integration is very complex. You don't have to actually, you know, if you write a bespoke piece of code, at least you know what you've written. At the time you wrote it, you'll lose sight of it later, but you do. With packages, well, it's just a package. Yeah? So here we are, a couple of packages, bit of configuration, da 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 da. Actually, 68% of it is what I'd say was brownfield. How to get it running in their estate, how to do the migration, and how to integrate it with the existing brownfield systems. All right? less than a third was new function. So, if... Sorry? Challenge. Oh, challenge. Back on Saturday. That meant... Sorry, I didn't... challenge was late, over budget, incomplete, dissatisfied users, didn't meet business case, or any or all of the above. Okay? So... Pardon? Failed, never made it. Was not implemented. Yeah. Challenge made it, but in an incomplete state, or over budget, or late, or all of those. So on this one, so if you do the maths, if we take an extreme case of an IT shop spending 10% on new, and extrapolate this, then they're going to get only 3% of their IT spend driving innovation. Everybody with the maths? So that's the scale of the problem, that IT is slowing down, which is shown on the next chart. Okay. So here we have the IT spend. Various things have happened. Some of these systems, you know, have just morphed into, we're using some packages, we've stuck some client server on, we've stuck some e-commerce on, we stuck this on, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And this is getting harder and harder and eating into this new layer. So that's the problem space. It's not a UK... Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. This is new innovation, right? This is the brownfield effect. This little layer here is things you have to do for regulation or possibly legislation, and this is keep the lights on, a steady state. Okay. My analogy of this is it's a bungee rope. Yeah, it's getting harder and harder to make progress. Right. There are some technologies around, you know, things like SOA, sort of try and sort of put wrappers around things, existing things, and so on. But they don't fix all the underlying problems, right? And one of the key problems is simply understanding it. There's a huge gap between the architectural view of what they think they've got and what's actually implemented in the technology and the application base, and even the data itself. Not the data definitions, but even the data itself is a brownfield problem. Okay. So that's the sort of space we're working in. Yeah. Does this make sense? Do you deal with this, those, you know, in your day-to-day job? If you have a day-to-day job. I don't quite have a day. I have every other day job. Yeah. So the concern is, and my motivation is, to try and help fix this problem to an industry that's been kind to me, and I think kind to the world, but it needs fixing. Okay. Then we get into some human things. You definitely can't read that. For many years, my friend and mentor at IBM was a gentleman called Maurice Perks. And he came up with the term of a headful. And a headful was, what can you get your head round? A couple of examples. I can get my head round a page of COBOL code. I can get my head round a page of Java code. I can get my head round an enterprise architecture on one page. Yeah? I can't get my head round all of the software that enterprise architecture represents. Okay. And in all of those headfuls, there's all of these disconnects. Who's ever read The Mythical Man Month? Fred Brooks. Sorry? The reprise version is only 15 years old. He did a. He revisited it in 95 when he was over here working at Imperial, yeah, and republished. Yeah, but I think that to me that's probably the best book on software development, right? And one of the things that key things that comes out of that is communications on large projects. Yeah, and that's a sort of another way of thinking of this, you know. Because you've got all these people trying to know things, and when you've got all these people trying to know things, you're going to get misinformation. You know, so everything at the top, what you think is quite different to what's actually at the bottom. Right? And what we're trying to come up with in our solutioning of this is being able to, from an engineering perspective, connect the whole thing together. Okay? So you've got the truth. And you can manage the complexity. But the problem itself isn't trivial. And it's quite a long journey. Here's just a bunch of tools across a framework in terms of, you know, we've got programming tools, we've got data tools, we've got systems management tools. Right. There's just loads and loads and loads of tools, right? And one thing about those tools, it's a bit like the communications issues of projects that Fred refers to. All of those tools tend to have their own data store. Yeah? So you can't join them all up together. All the information is in proprietary data stores, yeah? Again, contributing to the problem. I think when we say today's methods, interesting thing about our industry is this might sound a bit pompous, but I think probably some of the best thought through methods are with the large services organisations that deliver professional services. Some of those sell their methods, but there's lots of methods. There isn't a single method. We don't have really a common language or vocabulary even, right? When we actually do these things, right? So there's another complexity. And from here, what we're trying to say is, up here we've got the business context, right? Here, from that, we move down into, you know, defining these things at a lower level. Use cases have been very accepted by the industry at large in terms of helping to say, well, how do I use the system? These come down to subsystems. This all breaks down into lines of code, okay? So that's a very generic view of how we tend to do things. Right? Now, if I look at the IBM method, just about any type of engagement we do, we start with understand the current system landscape. How do you do that? You talk to people, you read PowerPoint, that well-known engineering tool. Unfortunately, too much of our commercial software is written using word processors and graphical editors. Yeah. Fortunately, systems, complex systems like the Airbus, use engineering tools. Who uses engineering tools here? Not very good, is it? Right? My first application in 1970 was a CAD system for engineers to design circuits, and it had all the electrical rules built in, so you couldn't actually build a system that didn't follow the electrical properties. You could still design it and it wouldn't work, yeah, but you couldn't design it outside of those physical rules, right? And here we are in 2001. Most of what we do in commercial IT is not on an engineering basis. Sorry? Well, it's one up from PowerPoint. I absolutely give you that, right? I just, as an aside, I moved house last year, right? I'm in the middle, there's a guy building me a custom design garage that I designed on Visio, right? So, yes, it works, right? At least for building garages. My expectation as the project sponsor is it will be delivered on time to budget. Okay? As long as they don't let me help. Oh, that's a good question. It's, I would say it's greenfield because it's in a very new piece of ground with no building on it before and no services. So everything, not attached to anything, it's detached. Yeah. Very slightly brown. So this is the, let's start again. Okay. There have been some start-up companies that have gone in with a greenfield and a new business model. Yeah. I remember back in the 90s talking about this. We were talking about always needing to be on the bleeding edge. But you don't. Because, you know, you're only on the bleeding edge for a bit, and in 40 years' time, you're definitely not. Right. I always remember when Direct Line went into being in the mid-90s. It was developed on an old... Client server was definitely in vogue, and it was developed on an old green screen package. The business model was new, the IT wasn't. It was a new implementation, but it wasn't a new system. But we can't start new. Right. It's just impossible. It's, you know, how do you rewrite 500 million man years, person years of coding, just like that? You can't do it. But we have to come back to this managing. So this is sort of a view of going forwards, right? Green, 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 green. Okay. Of course, when you deliver something, it immediately becomes part of the legacy estate again. So today's green is tomorrow's brown, right? As you cycle round. Okay. Sorry? Oh, IBM. Right. Some things, nice definition of complexity, I didn't create, but I reuse. And that is two types. There's inherent complexity. A lot of the brownfield problem is inherent in the legacy that's been built up over the last 40 years. The IT industry, induced complexity is when you start putting in the bells and whistles that nobody actually asks for. And you just do it. You just, this would be better. I know they didn't want it. And I'll just make it a bit more complex. Right? And that's induced. The IT industry is great at induced complexity. Okay. So some things just are damn complex. We need, how we train people to think simple, I don't know. Good design is invariably simple design. Right. How you define simple, I know it when I see it. Right. But it's that sort of getting people to think simple. Right. Anybody here from academia? Okay. I remember reading quite not that long ago, it was a US academic who was saying, one of the things we failed at in academia is trying to teach scale of system, scale of development. And what we use in university is by the sort of nature of the beast, tends to be small and, you know, deliverable by a single person, a headful, if you like. But we never really teach them scale. IBM started in Germany, I know in the UK, but I'm not sure which universities now. Number of universities IBM now teaches a module on system architecture. Yeah. Which has gone down extremely well. And we take them through a sort of a case study from an architectural perspective on how to develop systems. Right. I can put you in touch with the right person after the event, because I'm not sure who owns that in IBM in the last couple of years. Do you know, Richard? Steve Legg. I don't know him, but I know his name. I just heard it. So this is our non-functional and functional and constraints, okay? So this is where it gets quite hard. In order to understand this, we're using the language of surveying, right? Bit analogous again to the construction industry. You survey the landscape. What's there? What's hidden? What services are there? What might I find? Yeah. Am I going to dig up a power cable I didn't know? Put a digger through a sewer I didn't know existed? You have to survey the landscape for what you're going to put into this. If you're coming at it from a programming perspective, it's what are the things that I need to interface to? What are the things I need to migrate from? Do I know what's in them? I might know the interface. Does anybody understand the behaviour the other side of the interface? Right. Piece of work I was doing not very long ago, anonymous again. Somebody installing a package. And they said, it's very easy for us because we've got this nice messaging-based architecture. So all we've got to do is line up the interfaces. Job done. Are they right?
Simple. Sure answer. No.
You can use only two letters, okay? And we had a bit of a job to try and convince them. We said, well, actually, when you look inside the box at the business process embedded in the package, one thing is it works everything in real time, as opposed to, you know, data entry, batch process that you do today. The second thing is it runs a completely different business process. So what you do today is you have manual intervention, and then you re-enter that into the system. The new system does it all automatically. So it changes the business process, right? So it's not a simple matter of lining up interfaces. You have to understand what's the other side of the interface, both in technical and in business terms.
Both sides of the interface have a data dictionary. They use the same words to describe the same data in a different way.
If you're lucky. Homonyms and synonyms. Yeah. And the trouble is, there's stacks of this stuff out there. The older stuff, like me, you know, this comes back to me. Some of the people who created this stuff have retired. Nobody really knows what's in there. Pardon?
But they've read the book.
I think the most classic problem I had with it's a long time ago. Customer was putting in a new system, and the old system, each product had been specified in an IT building block, let's call it a chunk of code which embedded the business rules. They used it at runtime, and after they some time after starting the project with IBM, we discovered the customer didn't own the intellectual property inside the box that were the products that they sold, and they didn't know how they worked, and they had no IP rights. Therefore, they had no way to migrate from the old system, which is fairly extreme. Yeah? You know what's probably which one it was. I can tell you over a coffee. I was going to say, often, anybody get into intellectual property in the room? Right? It's quite a fascinating, you know, one of the things that our industry has sort of been spending years and years on is how can I reuse stuff, you know. Open source is a good example, but even open source, there's some gotchas around licensing on trying to reuse it. Yeah, but if the IP's not there, you're into a difficult commercial discussion. Okay, I'd ascertain. Here is a typical life cycle. Greenfield goes from 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock. Okay. What we're saying with our, we need to do with a brownfield. First of all, guess what's different about our life cycle to most? Sorry? It's circular. Right? Most life cycles are linear. Yeah? They start end. Start there. Finish there, right? This comes back to what you build. It's sort of eating your own dog food, if you've heard that expression. The next project, you know, cumulatively over time, keeps rebuilding on what you've already built. Yeah, but over time you forget what you've built. So we can do this. There's some good tools out there surveying things at a very low level, in terms of. They can tell you what your infrastructure is, what your hardware is, what software is installed. They can even tell you what the applications are. They can tell you which applications talk to which applications across which piece of this and everything else. All down there. More than a headful. Right? And what we need to do is to get all this low-level stuff up this sort of hierarchy to the high-level enterprise view, say. And we have a gap we call the abstraction gap. So how can we understand all of this information at different levels of abstraction for different people? You know, what programmers need different headfuls to architects, to designers, to testers. Yeah. So how can we get that bottom to top, top to bottom view of systems with integrity? By the way, I haven't got the answer. We're working on the answer. Okay, I've been working on the answer today with Richard and Kevin, right? Because it's the scale of the problem is quite significant. So it's a sort of where we're going to start in actually solving some of this. We've got bits and pieces where we've got some proof points of what we want to do. We know how we want to do it. We're now going out of that stage, I would say, from researching the problem to developing the solution. We're at that sort of inflection point now. Okay. Do you want to add anything? So, abstraction, coming back to what I touched on before, the IT tools themselves aren't well integrated. Okay? They're not designed to be integrated. But they're all part of the solution. They've all got part of the data that we need, the metadata that we need. Right? Some of them are very point solution. Say some are very good at telling you everything you want to know about how this spaghetti load of COBOL code works, fits together, and they'll give you insights into that. They'll even give you some automated reconstruction of it. But there's no real tool out there I know of that really tells you about how all the different pieces work. How does that talk to that? I know what that does, and I know what that does, but I don't know how they work together. Because it's all locked away in so many things. This thing talks to this thing, it sends it a message, therefore it's got these definitions in, you know, a messaging product, or a transaction product, or a database product, or a scheduling product. Right? It's all over the place. Right? And nothing brings them all together. So we sort of think the things that are missing in this life cycle, we've got tools that do this, we've got some that do this, we've got nothing that does that, that gets us up. So if we want to be able to talk, you know, to view these systems, the low level stuff, at a high level view, as we're starting to develop new, these are the big areas we believe are missing. We need one of these. And we think probably, almost definitely, we want to employ semantic technologies within that inventory to help bring the data together, the metadata, from multiple systems. Okay? Which implies, how the hell do you get all these systems to talk to each other, right? Is our view, the term inventory does imply that it is connected, cohesive, correct. One version of the truth. Okay? Possibly a different time slices, almost definitely. Okay? So this is the area we're focusing our work on currently. There's no shortage of opportunity in terms of commercial opportunity, because everybody's struggling with this. There's a lot of white papers flying around. Various people claim there's a well-known database vendor. But recently, there's a couple of white papers out for the insurance and banking industry, financial industries, describing the legacy problem. The answer is get rid of it all and put a package in. Not surprising, they're selling packages. Even if you put a package in, how do you migrate from it? Yeah. What is all this stuff? Take the insurance. Anybody work in insurance? Nope. Okay, I'll take the insurance industry. You have to believe everything I'm going to say now. Insurance tends to have lots and lots and lots of vertical package systems, product by product by product. Yeah. I've worked for a number that said, what I'll do is I'm going to buy this new super duper product package, I'll put it in, it's too big to do everything much, so what I'm going to do, I'm going to put a new product in, I launch a new product and it's great. And they never do the migration. Yeah. They never move everything else, so all they've got is another vertical. Yeah. Quite a few insurance companies and assurance companies sell the packages off with the systems to third parties who maintain it. It's sort of in a maintenance mode, but they can't get rid of it. Yeah? Because the package may have 50, 60, you know, somebody buys some sort of insurance for their grandchild, you know, who may live for 90 years. Yeah? And it's very, very hard to get some of those things off those sorts of systems. Oh, this is pretty. There's a bit of IBM software in there, but not too much.
Can I just go back to the last slide? In the 1980s and 90s, there was a lot of interest in case tools.
There was.
Is there any evidence that organisations which have stuck with cases and use those to build their systems can move forward And I was doing a case called lock up the definitions, procedures, and processes, and specifications in a way which enables further development compared with organisations which don't use it.
I'm just trying to think, you know, I don't know. I haven't come across a case tool in use since the 90s. Yes, because, any experience with case tools?
Only them being abandoned.
Okay, I will confess that I was a great believer in case tools from the early 80s. The ones I tended to come across were all tended to be based on James Martin's information engineering, right? So there was the thing that ended up as, was it KnowledgeWare, ADW, and then there was Texas Instruments, whatever it was, IEF, Information Engineering Facility. Yeah. Well, computer-aided software engineering. It was all based on the premise, which I still think is required, of using engineering approaches in the development. So, if you like, you would start by capturing requirements, you'd start capturing processes in information engineering. You capture the data side, how the processes acted on the data. It would then flow all the way through. You didn't code, was the premise. You generated from a design language in the tool, which was sort of a pseudo-code level, really. One of the pluses was, and what it did, IEF from memory could generate something like 80 different, for 80 different runtime environments, right? Unix environments, Windows environments, mainframe environments, different transaction managers, different database managers. Yeah. And that was its premise. Okay. But you're right. Where have they gone?
I can give you a part answer because I was involved in the early 80s and thereafter in developing these products. So the other ones, we got to a point where we looked at, was it in the cost? In the next generation.
Of tools
the
or
next generation of the product that you've had coming so far.
Right.
It was just huge numbers. So going back more than 20 years, it was £30-40 million.
Yeah.
To develop the next generation, the next, certainly release the next generation of your own product.
Well, no, I mean, IEF, which I knew more about, which was probably the most biggest case tool, was funded by it was funded by Texas Instruments to do their own internal IT development. Yeah, and James Martin were consulting with them, and then it turned into a product. Yeah, but you're right, where did they go? I know. They got bought by Sterling Software and then possibly Computer Associates, I think. But I haven't come across a client using IEF for years. We'll make to that one. So this was saying, here we have, I did get rid of that word. I'll explain that word in a minute. Different tools just in the IBM stack that we use in terms of capturing information, right? Then all of these things from different tools, it doesn't matter whether IBM or not, we need to be able to transform these things into triples in semantic technology, right? Because it's a much more powerful technology. Where was it I just read yesterday? I heard the government are investing 10 million in the Web Science group, Tim Berners-Lee and Nigel Shadbolt. Yeah, you see that this week? Right. But it's they're working on the sort of semantic internet space. I often call this the semantic intranet. It's inside the enterprise, right? With this data, through transformation from this data, we can produce different artifacts, be it documentation or whatever, code, right? Some of these things. We have had some early success down here in this transformation space, and on the small scale in this space with holding data in semantic technologies. Okay?
Right.
Here,
the role that the data dictionary
runs by. It's sort of there's it's much broader in scope. There's a few meta models around that define this. IBM has one called the System Definition Standard or Description Standard, which defines IT systems, all the different artifact types and the relationships. There's something smaller in scope. What was it? ArchiMAT, was it? From the Open Group. Right. So there's a few, and I know there are things like DODAF. MODAF, that's the other one, for the US Department of Defense. Right. There's various things. If you hold the data in its lowest form, which is self-defining in a triple, if you've got the data, believe that you can map it, transform it to the different meta models if you hold it at the right level. That's an assertion, not completely proven. Right? Okay. I'm just trying to remember, did I get to the concentric ones? Right. Sorry? He did the graphics.
How long did it take you?
Years.
Years.
Sorry, this is PowerPoint. So, this is taking the survey. Abstraction, as I say, is the key thing. I think I took it out. Oh, hang on. Let me just. I want to use a phrase here. Presenting to this audience today, I spent quite a bit of time yesterday checking my language. Not because it's inappropriate, right? IBM has probably quite its own internal language, yeah? So I went scanning around looking for things, right? And what I found is on this chart was a thing called the operational model. And it seems to be very much an IBM term. It's been around for about 20 years. And it really talks about the infrastructure and how things are deployed on the infrastructure. Yeah. Middleware, code, data, etc. And it doesn't seem to be used or practiced many other places. Some of the elements of operational modelling I found. Where did I find them? On the object management group site. Some elements of it. But an IT system, and I thought I was going to use a whiteboard, but I won't. So I'm going to do my arm waving. Right? Chris has a very simple view of IT systems that support business. Imagine a tetrahedron. Okay. When I first came up with this years ago, I had this long discussion with a client about what a tetrahedron was. It's a four-sided pyramid. Right? So, if you imagine the pyramids in Egypt, they are five-sided because they have a base. A tetrahedron has four, if you like, upright faces and a base. At the base, we have applications, we have infrastructure, and that can be hardware, networks, operating systems, middleware. And then we have data, which resides on infrastructure and is typically accessed through applications. They're all connected, and collectively they support the business. And if you don't have all of those things in place, guess what? It's at best challenged. Yeah? So in my simple view of the world, right? Boom. So here, this tetrahedron is sort of saying, down here, we've got our infrastructure, our code and our data. From that, we can model. And at the higher level, we have patterns. If you search YouTube, still there, isn't it? It was this. If you search YouTube, right, you'll find something interesting we did at a bit of, well, Richard did predominantly, 5 years ago? Four, yeah. If you can imagine this as an enterprise supported by IT, we put it as, people heard of Second Life, virtual world? So programmed in Second Life, we took some of these artifacts, took them into Second Life automatically, and created on the fly a three-dimensional architecture that sort of conforms to that tetrahedron. And if you are a Second Life user, you can actually fly through the architecture, which is quite fascinating. I've never flown through an IT architecture before. For those of you who don't have a Second Life ID, you go onto YouTube, you can watch the video, okay, of Richard flying through. Okay? Yeah. Now, one of the issues with IT systems for people compared to other engineering disciplines, what's the difference between an IT system and a civil engineering project? Name one of the key differences.
You can't see it.
You can't see it. Sorry? Absolutely. Right? You can't see it. So it's very hard to figure out where it is. You can see a bridge going up, and you can sort of see the progress. But an IT system is quite difficult. Yeah? Because it doesn't have a physicalization. This... Yeah.
As opposed to
99%
it's
I found
I mean,
some
paper they all use CAD-CAM now, but anyway.
Yeah. But I remember years ago talking to my wife, I realised that I just always sort of was comfortable with being able to visualise something in my brain, an IT system in my brain, how it would work. Yeah. And I realised that this, most people, and when we talk about we're doing this, these things for business, not for fun, they can't. They have other strengths, okay? And it's, that's part of the business IT gap, is trying to cross that divide. So this is the sort of structure here. I think having something like that, a 3D representation that people can explore, helps, perhaps, bridge that gap as well, right? We also then think over here, if you then are able to take these things over here, that you will be able to, back to that other chart of generating the use through the use of patterns here, templates say, new capabilities from what you've got in here. So we've got a a more engineering based approach to taking the old to creating the new, right? Not only the new, but the pieces that need to integrate the old and the new, or if you're decommissioning, how to be able to migrate from the old to the new. So, this is what we're working on. Probably, I don't just say, in terms of completeness of the answer, I think IBM's in quite a good position because it's got so many of the pieces. Right? As a IBM Fellow Emeritus, i.e., I do this stuff because I want to, I think it's important. I do that for free for IBM, and in return, I get access to all of IBM's resources and capabilities and people, okay, to try and move this forward. Why don't I go and use somebody else? Actually, I think because I know the beast, and I think they've got most of the bit parts I need, working with the people like Richard, Kevin, and Grady to come up with the answer. Okay? I'm not doing this for commercial gain. I'm doing it to try and repay to the industry that I've thoroughly enjoyed working in, still enjoy working in. Yeah? So that's why we do it. And that's basically, as I say, we're now moving from, we understand the problem, we know the elements of the solution, and now, in the words of Nike, we've just got to do it. Okay? We've just got to get on and do it. And that's what we're trying to do. Okay? I know the material will get distributed. There's just a few key links. There's a more complete, there's a definition of brownfield up on Wikipedia. Of course, there's two. There's the software one, in brackets, and the original one on the construction industry. Component modelling, let me just say, what's a component model? Okay. So, it really came out of the object thinking. It sort of says, these are the software components of my system. Right? A, B, talk to each other. B talks to C, etc. These are the components. That is where it all started. Right? Actually, when you look on Google, it's sort of, most of the entries talk about Microsoft.com. Microsoft component. Right? But actually, when you look into it, this is a better description of really what it was before it sort of got taken over. So it's really the application space, the components, more in the application space. Operational modelling is about infrastructure and where it meets applications and data. And if you don't know UML, then there's a... Wikipedia to me is very consumable definitions. You can find an awful lot on what the UML standard is, okay, for modelling. But if you don't know it, that'll give you an insight into what it is. And I hope there wasn't too much IBMEs in it. Okay? You've been very quiet for about 20 minutes.
Thank you very much, Chris. I think we're going to have any
questions.
But let's just repeat that the slides will be on our website, and all being well, we have an audio recording. Yep, I've got a thumbs up at the back. The audio recording will be on the side. Visible. Now, questions, Brian.
You describe a very complex problem beautifully, if I may say so. And it's rather interesting to find that I spent my life doing something that I didn't know had a label called brownfield development. It's rather nice.
It's only had a label for 5 years or so.
The thing I find interesting, though, is that you describe both the problem and the solutions against the background of IBM, actually, which actually provides a relatively, or has provided, a relatively stable development, set of tools and environment. You said at the beginning that the steel code that you wrote 40 years ago running out there, that can't be true of today's programmers who are working with Microsoft tools. Because their software...
They didn't exist.
...is every 5 or 6 years you have to rewrite everything. They've just announced a replacement for .NET. So we've got to start writing everything else all over again, yet again. Now, how does that perspective of actually having to almost treat everything as greenfield every 5 or 6 years, how does that affect the work that you're doing?
Okay. So, the extreme case is 40 years plus, right? A well-known bank we might have mentioned earlier is still running 45-year-old assembler, because it works. Yeah. Remember what I said about internet years and my quip on creating legacy quicker? Right? Bring that bang up to date. Agile is the solution to everything, isn't it? Right? I tell you, it is, isn't it? I have a point of view. I think it is the solution to some things with certain characteristics, but not everything. There was a report published by the government in March this year called System Error, and they started a blog. I think it's still there on LinkedIn, the blog. My point of view was I don't agree with Agile being the answer to everything. It's the answer to some things, yeah. But the mantra which says Agile is everything. What I've seen is Agile is good. In practice, it's practiced badly too often. Right? A lot of the work I do is outside IBM for clients, yeah. And their Agile developments, right, are not nice, because they create their legacy quicker. Right? They shortcut on design. They tend not to document anything. And then they move on to the next one. Right? And here you have your new legacy. We got there quicker, right? Probably less maintainable. Over my 40 years plus, I have seen... So when I joined IBM, which wasn't my... No, when I started on IBM technology as an IBM customer, it wasn't my first job. But when I got into mainframes, I found there was a lot of sort of discipline and thinking. And I think when new technologies you find the people who are agile jump onto the new ship, right, and try and escape the process, the engineering discipline, right? And then they're the early adopters, and they're often the bad practitioners. So we do have a lot of modern legacy. You know, Grady says it's the day it's written. Yeah, it's definitely the day it's installed. Yeah. So there's probably, you know, some of the 40-year-old code is in better shape than the 5-year-old code. Yeah. Because it's still running. And a lot of things, like you mentioned, has to be rewritten. Of course, you don't get the 5-year effect, but what have you done? You rewrite it to run on the new software, and you haven't actually created anything new. Right? My client, who had to cancel their system, the non-functional requirements were not the only problem. I was there a week, 3 years in user acceptance test. The program director said, "What state am I in?" And I said, "2/3 of what you developed won't work. You'll have to throw it away. 2/3. I said, "The remaining third, you have no idea how it meets your business need because you were unable to capture what the existing system did." So two thirds was thrown away, one third they had no idea how it met the business need, and until they got through UAT they couldn't get a grip of it.
Did they pay your invoice?
Yeah. No, I was the messenger. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think we've got time for one last, sorry.
I ramble on the answers, go on then.
Any more questions? I've got one.
Oh God.
Right. You talked about tools and that immediately raises the vision of something like the Twist and lots of plugins. Is that what you have in mind?
What do we need in tools? Certainly we need to be able to get the data out of the proprietary silos of any tool, but they're not just IBM tools, they're all sorts of tools. Okay, so you need something there to be able to extract parser type things. Okay, we certainly need some things within the inventory. We need a scalable triple data store for sure. I don't mind who comes up with it. Pardon? Eclipse doesn't. I was going to say Oracle 11, possibly 10, has some very basic semantic support, but it's not. I don't think it's very scalable. Okay, so we need some of that, right? And we need some of those things to transform, etc. Right? This is more of a integration problem in many senses of bringing these things together, right, into a single place, so that you can get all of the information in one place that ties together, right? Something like an operational data store, right, that tends to bring all these disparate systems together if we were doing an IT system.
Right, one more question.
How
far away do you think you are from the solution?
Well, not 40 years. I'm not that optimistic. Okay. Bits of it we solved. Late 90s, and we used it on that project you mentioned in Scotland. We did some prototyping of this a long time ago, which is just, we've lost. Gone. Right? But I know we did a lot of this work 10 years ago. And then lost it for a bunch of reasons. So we're trying to recreate some of that. My view, if I'm optimistic, we will have solved some of this problem by year end 2012. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. We do have vertical slices.
Yeah.
What we don't have is the.
Right. Is this going to be developed as one humongous effort? No. Right? As somebody who's not completely bought into Agile, probably we'll use Agile techniques on some of it. Okay. So, we'll certainly start next year. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff. Really I enjoyed it.